The Pasco County DEC is providing this podcast as a public service in order to let you know more about the issues and ideas which Democrats have identified as being very important for voters, and also to provide a forum for Democratic candidates for office. Our podcasts are open to anyone interested in how Pasco Democrats are dealing with the important issues of the day. You can check out our PascoDems.com website and also on Facebook, Pasco Dems, and the views expressed by the guest and host on our podcast are their own, and not the official views of the Pasco County Democratic Party or Democratic Executive Committee. In 1999, I attended my first Pasco Democratic Executive Committee meeting. I sat for the whole meeting in the back of the room. No one greeted me. When I came in, no one greeted me. That was my introduction to Pasco Democrats. Yet about 6 months later, I had come to a couple of three meetings, and the next thing I knew, I was appointed vice chair, which I served for 11 years. And then from 2012 to 2018, I served as treasurer. So that was 7 years. So it's 18 years of experience with Pasco Democrats. During that period of time, particularly these days, I've been running some podcasts for the Dems and also chair of the Media and Messaging Committee. As a result, I've been sitting back and saying, okay, where are we now in terms of our election? And I did, in fact, find that when I'm doing my reading, I do a lot of reading in terms of politics and so forth each and every day, I have found some people that I really particularly pay attention to, and one of those is Jennifer Rubin. Now, Jennifer is, as you might know, a columnist for the Washington Post. In one of her recent columns, she talked about this. What are the debates revealing about Democrats and Republicans? And her answer was, they aren't in the same political universe. And that may be very well what you see, too, and what you're experiencing in listening to debates and reading and so forth. On October 19th, she wrote this column, that the election cycle is not about competing policy or ideas or agendas. It's about two parties operating in entirely different political worlds. Judging by the debates, Republicans want to dispense with much of the federal government and repeal virtually every Biden achievement, including the bipartisan ones. They are determined to upend, upset, and uproot workable government without offering any problem-solving ideas of their own. They have no alternative plan for health care. They have no solutions to address inflation. So what do they do after carving up the federal government? The answer is likely to cut taxes for the rich, but they cannot say so. The result is a void where a governing agenda normally would be. As Rubin points out, watch the debate performances by Republican Senate candidates Ron Johnson in Wisconsin, Mike Lee in Utah, Herschel Walker in Georgia, Rubio here in Florida, or J.D. Vance in Ohio. And you'll be hard-pressed to name a policy solution they offered. Close the border is not a policy. It's a crudely stated aspiration. Stop woke Democrats isn't even a coherent thought. Stop them from doing what? Indeed, many resort to accusing their Democratic opponents of positions they do not hold. After Vance repeatedly attempted to tie Democrat Tim Ryan to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Ryan suggested that Vance move back to San Francisco to run against her. In the Georgia's governor race, Democratic challenger Stacey Abrams showered a debate audience with a stream of policy ideas, including, as the Associated Press reported, a much larger teacher pay raise than the $5,000 that Kemp delivered, an expanded Medicaid program, increased access to state contracts for small and minority-owned businesses, and broader access to college aid paid for by gambling. But for Republican Governor Kemp, the only policy issue that seemed to enter him was crime, a familiar cudgel used against Democrats. And don't even try to parse through Walker's debate answers or policy ideas. His inability to make any serious case for opposing a price cap on insulin reminded all viewers that he lacks the capacity to address serious challenges. Now, Republican candidates have a good reason to eschew to shun concrete policy ideas. When Senator Rick Scott, the chair of the National Republican Senatorial Committee, rolled out an 11-point agenda for the party, it included tax increases for the poor, abortion bans, pandering on critical race theory, and sunsetting entitlement programs such as Social Security. Virtually every other Republican ran from it. House Minority McCarthy produced a GOP agenda, but it was right on details, to put it mildly. What was there was frightful. The New York Times reported and hinted that Republicans would look to change the Affordable Care Act and roll back legislation allowing Medicare to negotiate the cost of prescription drugs. These ideas, like Johnson's proposal to repeal the Affordable Care Act, turn off all but the hardcore base. Well, midterm debates rarely offer competing ideas to address real issues. They can serve a critical purpose, as Rubin points out. At the very least, Democrats can use them to expose Republicans' extremism. And I would say that when all of us who are talking with potential voters these days, that's a good lesson for us to learn, to make sure we point out just what the Republicans are trying to do. They can learn from Evan McMullen, the independent running for Utah's Senate seat, who unmasked Lee's role in the coup plot following 2020 election. Quote, "When the barbarians were at the gate, you were happy to let them in," unquote, he declared, noting Lee's willingness to scrounge around for phony electors. He also slammed Lee for his Putin-friendly votes. "You are the only member of Utah's congressional delegation not to be blacklisted by Putin." "There's a reason," McMullen said. "It's because in 2017, Senator Lee was one of the only two senators to vote against sanctioning Putin's regime. In 2019, he went to Russia alone and discussed lifting sanctions." Meanwhile, Ryan repeatedly blasted Vance during the debate for siding with the insurrectionists and for touting conspiracy theorists Alex Jones. Ryan also forced Vance to expose his radical position on abortion with a nonsensical defense of bans with a time limit for rape and incest victims. And in the Senate Florida debate, which I'm sure most of you heard the other night, Democratic candidate Val Demings pulverized Rubio for refusing to act on guns, opposing a cap on insulin prices and prescription drug cost controls, and championing forced birth policies. "As a police detective," she said, "who investigated cases of rape and incest, no, Senator, I don't think it's okay for a 10-year-old girl to be raped and have to carry the seed of a rapist. No, I don't think it's okay for you to make decisions for women and girls." Rubio looked utterly overwhelmed. Put differently, debates allow Democrats to present themselves as a legitimate party trying to fashion rational solutions to real problems. Meanwhile, Republicans show they couldn't care less about all that governing business. Ending popular programs, stripping away legislative achievements, and passing more tax cuts are all they've got. Confronted with a capable opponent and without the cushy confines of right-wing media, which accepts their inanities and conspiracy theories as fact, Republicans find it hard to conceal that they are captives to a cult of extremism. If voters in less than 3 weeks select Republicans, they cannot claim ignorance of their Trump idolatry, their cruel views on abortion, their assault on government, and their refusal to stand by Democratic values. It's nihilism versus center-left. Take your pick. And Jennifer Rubin, again, she's outstanding. And remember, years ago, she leaned Republican. But in the last 4 or 5 years, I think basically since Trump, she has come out more and more in favor of Democratic positions rather than Republican positions. So that's one thing I think for us to think about. I'm going to turn now to Arthur Delaney, who is a columnist, and he had one recently called "Republicans Would Use Debt Limit to Force Social Security Cuts." For most of us who are listeners to this podcast, Social Security is a very important part of our lives. And for those who are not yet getting Social Security, you should remember it's your future they're talking about when these things happen. Now, Delaney points out that in Washington, if Republicans win control of the U.S. House of Representatives next month, they could hold the government's credits hostage to force spending cuts, including to programs like Social Security and Medicare. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, Republican of California, and other lawmakers said this month they'll use the federal government's debt ceiling to try to pry policy concessions from Democrats. You can't just continue down the path to keep spending and adding to the debt, McCarthy told Punchbowl News in an interview published Tuesday. Quote, and if people want to make a debt ceiling for a longer period of time, just like anything else, there comes a point in time where, okay, we'll provide you more money, but you got to change your current behavior, unquote, McCarthy said. And then he said, we're not just going to keep lifting your credit card limit, right? The debt ceiling is a legal limit on the amount of money that the federal government can borrow in order to pay for spending that Congress has already authorized. Raising the debt limit doesn't create new spending, it just prevents the government from defaulting on its debts. A federal debt default would be unprecedented in modern times and would have catastrophic economic consequences. Republicans used it as leverage during the presidency of Barack Obama, but not when Donald Trump was president. Now that a Democrat is in the White House, debt ceiling drama comes back. And how many times over the years have we known that when you talk about Republicans, they get in office, and when they leave us in debt. And then the Democrats come in and have got to figure out some way of trying to take care of that problem. Quote, the debt ceiling is the natural place from which you can operate to affect spending change, Republican Representative Chip Roy of Texas told Huffington Post earlier this month. The Treasury Department has said Congress will have to deal with the debt ceiling again sometime next year, although the timing is imprecise because it depends on somewhat unpredictable fluctuations in federal revenue and outlays. Republicans threatened to block a debt limit increase last year, but 14 Senate Republicans ultimately voted in favor of allowing Democrats to raise the ceiling by themselves with a simple majority vote. I'm sure you all remember that. Such an outcome would be much more complicated if Republicans controlled the House. Republican House members vying to chair the House Budget Committee in the event of a GOP House majority, and we hear this all the time in the news, that the Republicans are already planning master strokes of what they're going to do if they get back in power. Not including the kings we're talking about now, but having all sorts of investigations into everything. A fellow named Republican from Texas, Jody Arrington, has said, for instance, that he favors raising the eligibility age for both programs, Medicare and Social Security. So, Social Security and Medicare provide monthly cash and medical benefits to older Americans, and past proposals to cut the programs have proven unpopular before lawmakers abandoned them. Medicare's Hospital Insurance Trust Fund faces a shortfall in 2028, while Social Security's Trust Fund will remain solvent until 2034, according to the latest projections. In 2011, Republicans won discretionary spending cuts as part of a debt ceiling standoff with Obama. The discretionary side of the federal budget is smaller than the mandatory side that includes programs like food benefits, Social Security, and Medicare. The cuts affected a range of government services, including grants for Meals on Wheels programs that delivered hot meals to the elderly and disabled. Even if Republicans won the House and the Senate, Democrats would retain the ability to block legislation in the upper chamber, and President Biden would still have a veto pen. But Republicans would most likely bet that Democrats would agree to their demands rather than risk a debt default, which could roil financial markets. Richard Neal, who's the one influential Democrat in the House Ways and Means, and he's the chair, has said that Democrats would consider handling the debt limit in a lame duck session before the end of the year rather than give Republicans the opportunity to threaten to blow up the economy next year. But Democrats have so far passed up opportunities to make the debt ceiling less of a nuisance by raising it by a huge amount or simply abolishing it. I'm going to stop there for today. I'm going to put another one up in a few minutes, and you might want to listen to, and that is, why is it the Democrats seem to lose out to Republicans on everyday issues affecting most Americans? That'll be coming up in a few minutes.